Odyssey World. I'm Bob, producer of the Adventures in Odyssey Club.
And I'm Jesse, editor of Focus on the Family Clubhouse magazine. Welcome to the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast.
Today we're talking to actor Eric Pasoja. Eric has voiced three different bad guys for us on Adventures in Odyssey, but he's actually a really nice guy.
He is, and he's a man with an interesting background and all sorts of surprising talents. But first, here's the latest news. Voting begins today for the Avery Awards for Album 67, More Than Meets the Eye, and Album 68, Out of the Blue.
If you're new to the podcast, the Avery Awards are where you, the fans, vote on various awards for the episodes from the past year.
Yeah, there's Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Scene, Best Episode, Best Dance Sequence, and more. And then we always have a lot of fun with the Avery Awards podcast.
Those are certainly some of our most memorable, Jess. Check out our website to cast your votes today.
And now, let's hear from actor Eric Pasoja.
Let's do it.
Eric, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Yes, fun. Thank you.
Well, you know, your biography notes that your mother is an aeronautical engineer turned oncologist, and your father is a quantum physicist. Okay, I can barely pronounce those things, but with parents in those fields, how did you consider and then become an actor?
I decided to.
Okay.
You have to understand from the perspective of my mom, who was a... have you seen the movie Hidden Figures?
Yes.
My mom was an aeronautical engineer, female, in the 1960s.
Wow.
She decided that that's what she wanted to do. And resistance from the level of her teachers to her mom, who once introduced my mom to a friend of hers by saying, yes, she's studying to be a math teacher. Mom decided, you know, I'm going to study this. This is what I really want to do. And she did. And she got all A's, so they couldn't say no. And halfway through it, she decided that's not what she wanted to do anymore. She was working for IBM, and she was one of the first team to take news off the AP wire for the New York Times and program it. And she went through Eastern Europe teaching computer science to Eastern Bloc countries and decided she wanted to be a doctor. So when I said I wanted to be an actor, far be it from them to say no, because she didn't walk the usual beaten path. And my father, not only did he support her, but he supports dreams. And so they let me be what I wanted to be.
Oh, that's great. Well, you were born in England. You don't have a British accent, but you do specialize in accents. What do you suppose you'd sound like right now if you had grown up in England?
But it sort of depends. If you're going to use an RP, sort of received pronunciation, sound more like this. But then again, it's like, you know, depends on where you're from. It's like England. It's like the South of America, you know. It's like, are you from Texas? You know, you have one accent. So, you know, and then you have New Orleans. It's sort of different. You know, England is how big is England? Is it the size of my pinky nail? You have about 1,000 accents there. And then you have cars. You have Ireland. You've got Scotland, and you've got the Welsh. So it really, I'd love to go back because I'd like to actually, you know, if I were to go to England now, they'd hear me. And if I spoke RP, they just wouldn't think about it. But if I tried to give a regional accent, they go, where are you from anyway?
We also spent some time living in Japan. What were you doing there?
I was training karate. I lived in a karate school for 6 months.
And so you're a fifth degree black belt in karate, right? Okay, now what is a fifth degree?
Yeah, I suppose I am.
You sound dangerous. So what is a fifth degree black belt?
What it is if imagine a man with right hip or osteoarthritis and a rotator cuff tear on his left shoulder. That's what a fifth degree black belt looks like. I've been training since I was a little kid. My dad was into judo and karate, and he was an All-American swimmer. And he used to go to karate class, and I'd just sit in the back and color. And then he said, why don't you join us? And I'm like, all right. And that's when I started. And then I talked with a guy named Master Okazaki. He was just a phenomenal human being. And he encouraged me to go to Japan. He wrote me a letter of recommendation. And I showed up with a couple of bags and a letter of recommendation. And because it was from Okazaki Sensei, I was able to train anywhere I wanted. And I lived in a place called the Hoitsugan Dojo in Ebisu, Tokyo, without being able to speak a word of Japanese when I got there. I taught English. I trained twice a day, 6 days a week, and that's how I spent my first semester, junior year of college.
Wow. With all that travel, how did you eventually find your way to Los Angeles and begin your acting career?
It turns out there are a few movie cameras here.
Oh, yeah. So I've heard that.
Yeah, yeah. So I said, you know, let's go where the movie cameras are. I grew up in New York, which, you know, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. But I couldn't make it there, so I came to L.A. No, I left New York because I really love movies. I really love film, and I love television, especially television over the past 15 years. And I'm following my dreams. I'm living my dreams. It's pretty cool.
Now, you said your mentor is Martin Landau. And for our young listeners, Martin is a Hollywood acting legend, really. So how did you get connected with a man of that stature? And what is one piece of wisdom that he gave you that you can share with our listeners?
Well, I'll say this. Yeah, Marty, the late Martin Landau, was not only a tremendous actor, but he was also a mensch. Just a phenomenal human being. And by the way, as I think most people who are where I am, I've had more than one mentor. So many people have been kind and generous. But I met Martin Landau because I auditioned for the Actors Studios 6 times over 5 years. And finally, I got in. I think they weren't looking when I went on, and they just figured, he's been around. Let's pass it. They're like, oh, yeah, that guy went in. Yeah, he's fine. He's got enough troubles. Let's let him in. I just kept putting up work there. And the thing about Martin, he was a great moderator at the Actors Studio, and he really took talent under his wing, and he really helped sort of shape me into the actor I am today. He had a lot of wonderful things. I'm going to give you 2 things he said, and it's a little bit actory, but I think it's important. One of the key things in actors is choices. Choices, choices, choices. The choices you make. And being able to take a look at a script and saying, you know what, this is what is obvious on the page. Let me come up with some choices that are really, really personal and really interesting. So when people see my work, they'll connect to themselves. And the other thing he said is 95% of the work we do as an actor, nobody ever sees. It's just for us. Huh. We fill out this character's life. You'll never know what Hamlet had for breakfast, but if it's somehow it informs the scene, create it. You know? Maybe Hamlet has indigestion when he says to be or not to be. I'm not sure that's a good choice, but that's a choice anyway.
You know, finding a mentor and then listening to a mentor and following their advice is just so important for people of all ages. So what advice can you give for those who are looking to find a mentor?
Well, that's easy. That's real easy. There's one thing you need to do in order to get a mentor, and that's to absolutely refuse to be shy about it. Mm. You just keep asking until you have someone close to you that really gets you. I mean, having a mentor that kind of looks down their nose at you is a waste of your time. Connecting with someone authentically and having them see who you are and what you stand for. And by the way, it helps to stand for something.
Yeah,
I stand for freedom and empowerment. I stand for what I see life to be an absolute miracle. If I stand in that and I live in that and I talk to a mentor, they're going to get that. And I say to all the young people out there, really explore and dig deep in who you are and what you stand for, and then just approach people and talk to them. And if you approach someone, it's because they excited you and they vibrated with who you're being, and start a conversation. There's no reason not to. You have nothing to lose, everything.
Well, let's turn a corner. Before we start talking about Adventures in Odyssey, we actually have something called
TRQ.
A TRQ is a totally random question that comes straight from our fans. And this one comes from this one comes from Dottie Family. And Dottie Family wants to know, what's your favorite book that has been made into a movie? So I guess they want to know what the book, not maybe the movie, but the book.
I'm having a tough time. I'm sitting on a razor's edge of 2 books, I have to tell you. One of them is Stephen King's The Stand. It was made into a TV movie and has been getting kicked around Hollywood for a long time. Surprise, surprise, it's about a super virus. And the other one has been made into a movie, which is Ernest Hemingway's For Whom the Bell Tolls, which is a staggering piece of work. I didn't read it until I turned
Yeah.
And I tried reading it a couple of times, and I finally read it, and it actually just it opened my heart and it broke my heart, and it's worth reading.
Eric, talking with you, you're obviously a good guy, but so far you've only played bad guys for us on Adventures in Odyssey, and in your first Odyssey episode, To the Ends of the Earth, you played the bad guy, Cain. So what sort of preparation did you do for that part, and how do you do research into getting into an episode that's set in Papua New Guinea?
There's a wonderful website called IDEA Accents, and there are a whole bunch of other resources like YouTube. And what I did is I just did an exhaustive search for the accent and found a couple of pretty deeply web-embedded audio files of the accent from that time. And I just listened to it over and over and over and over again and noticed how the vowels and consonants sort of blended together and created the voice. And then I figured, what do I want? What do I need? And who's in my way? And by the way, whether you're playing a good character or a bad character, it's always about who's in your way. You know, with Forrest Gump, it was about the fact that Jenny just couldn't see him for who he was. That was what was in his way. And so I find the humanity in that character. I mean, I've played Charles Manson. I played more serial killers on television than there have been serial killers. It's ridiculous. However, there are roles I'll turn down. There really are roles I'll turn down.
Yeah. Well, you've played a couple Nazis for us, including one on this month's club adventure, Millstones. You know, you do stand-up comedy, too, which is a really interesting juxtaposition. I mean, you're talking about playing serial killers, and yet at the same time, you can go on stage and you can do a set. Tell us about that. What made you want to do stand-up?
When I started stand-up comedy, I was profoundly insecure. And really wanted other people's approval and knew I could do all these voices and characters and accents, and I got applause and laughter and approval from doing them. And over time, I realized that really the only thing that matters is what you have to say and what you share with people, because that's all you're leaving with. Just because you can make the sound of a ping pong ball or an electric guitar doesn't mean that you're connecting with people. And it's really all about connecting.
No, it's funny. You know, you come from brilliant parents, and you're obviously brilliant. I've noticed that
What happened?
No. It's comedians, people who can write comedy are just brilliant. They look at things a little bit differently. They just have that little twist, that ability to find the humor and to share it. So what's been your best stand-up comedy experience? And maybe your worst, too.
Let's start with the worst.
Okay.
This is really funny. I don't even know why I ever became a comic after this. I was between fifth and sixth grade or sixth and seventh grade. And my sleepaway camp was having a talent contest. I figured, why should I enjoy a talent contest when I could humiliate myself in front of the boys' camp and the girls' camp? And I went on stage in rollerblades. I'd never done comedy before. I had no interest or aspirations to be a comic. I was a kid. I went on rollerblades. Figuring if I took a not roller skates, if I took a fall, I'd get a laugh. That's not what happened. I took a fall, and then I was sitting there on stage and realized that if I stood up, I'd fall again. So I started telling jokes sitting down, and in the middle of my first long joke, one of the counselors yelled out my punchline.
No.
That was the only laugh I got. The best experience, wow, you know? I'll tell you. I was 25, and I was performing at the Comedy Cellar, it's one of my favorite comedy venues in the entire world. And for about 4 months, Esty, who books the Comedy Cellar, put me between Dave Attell and Dave Chappelle every single night while I was starting out. And that was very interesting. If you know Dave Attell, he's just one of the greatest jokesmiths alive. And you know Dave Chappelle. And I remember going off stage one night and having a really great set. And Dave goes, "Hey, that one thing was a good joke."
Huh?
And to hear that from him just made my week. I felt like not only did I have a great set, but someone I deeply respect in the business, who is an incredible joke writer, paid me a compliment on my joke writing. And I realized I can do this. And the next night I went on and bombed. It was perfect.
Keeps you humble.
Well, we appreciate your voice and your talents and everything that you bring to the characters of Odyssey. And we do hope that you one day you can play a dad or another character with dimension and bring more of your talent and just brilliance to the show. So thank you so much for your time today, Eric.
Thank you. I really enjoy Adventures in Odyssey. And I love your storytelling. So thanks for having me anytime.
You can hear Eric several places in this month's club episode, Millstones. He's part of an Imagination Station adventure with Renee Carter.
But there's another story going on in this episode, too, involving Connie and Jay. Let's hear a preview.
This month on the Adventures in Odyssey Club, Connie announces an important cause.
So I'm organizing a fundraiser for Pamela.
But when fundraising doesn't go the way Connie hopes, Jay has a deal for her.
But if I got a better than mediocre donation from someone tomorrow, might that be worth a double hot fudge sundae today?
But there may be a problem with Jay's methods.
You're not going to post that online, are you?
A little contribution and, you know, the picture goes kapoof.
That's this month on the Adventures in Odyssey Club.
You can join the Adventures in Odyssey Club today at aioclub.org. That 28-day free trial is still available, so there's never been a better time to check out what's going on in the club.
That's all for this edition of the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast, a presentation of Focus on the Family.
You can visit us online at adventuresinodyssey.com/podcast, or you can call us at 1-800-A-FAMILY. I'm Bob.
And I'm Jesse, reminding you that with God in your life, every day is an adventure.
Focus on the Family and Adventures in Odyssey present the Imagination Station books, an exciting series for readers ages 6 and up. Through wit's greatest invention, young readers will travel to the Colosseum in ancient Rome and a longboat in Greenland.
I am Eric the Red.
They're Vikings.
And there's so much more. When you visit theimaginationstation.com, you can find study guides and devotionals, plus fun family activities. More information at theimaginationstation.com or 1-800-A-FAMILY.